Hey guys, and welcome back to Lumos Maxima,
the podcast with bright ideas about all things Harry Potter.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Delaney, and we're your hostess with the most.
This podcast will contain spoilers, mature language, adult themes, and a lot of opinions.
Each week, we analyze Harry Potter themes, content, characters, and more.
And we even do some extra stuff to keep it fun and fresh.
Now that you know the deal, let's get into the real stuff in this week's episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Lumos Maxima. We are actually doing a fun one this week, I think.
Maybe. I think it'll be fun.
I think it should be fun. I think it'll be fun for 75% of the people who like Harry Potter and not fun for the other 25%.
If anything, it's lighthearted.
It's lighthearted. So. Yes, but we are going to be doing an episode all about Quidditch this week, which is very exciting. it's one of my favorite parts of the books. I know a lot.
It's very cool.
It's a favorite part for a lot of people. And then it's not a favorite part for some people. And we'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
So I think we're just going to get into it. We'll get our weekly wizarding question first, which is, and this is talked about so much, and I don't know that there's a clear answer, but why, when Harry is bitten by the basilisk in book two, why does that not kill the Horcrux living inside him? Because then we get to book seven, and that literally that exact same basilisk thing is used to kill a Horcrux. And
what's so, up? So, yeah, I really have two theories as to why it could have maybe not happened, but I do agree that it is a plot hole. But the only things that I could see, the reason it wouldn't have happened, wouldn't have killed the Horcrux inside of Harry, is that because it's attached to a living soul, maybe, like, it needed more juice, I guess you could say, to, like, actually kill off that Horcrux, whereas all the other Horcruxes aren't attached to a living being other than Nagini. But then the other thing is that maybe Fox healing him did, like, it did that before it could kill the Horcrux. Those are the only two things that I can see happening.
So I've definitely thought that maybe Fox healing him also healed the Horcrux, which that would be an interesting oversight on the magical community's part. But I think that this is one of those things where it's just a plot hole. It almost makes me think that Harry wasn't a Horcrux in her mind until later on in the books.
Or the epiphany about, like, oh, I could use basilisk venom to kill a Horcrux. Like, that was, I don't know, because we kill Tom Riddle's diary.
He kills the diary with it in that same scene.
Yeah.
So.
It's definitely something where you, I mean, it was, obviously we can tell it was very early on. It was the second book. So I don't think that she had all of the details figured out. And that is one oversight I think she did, for sure.
I think that there are still a lot of questions about Horcruxes. I would love to get, like, one of those little short stories that she does on all these random topics. Hit us up with one about Horcruxes, because it is...
It's still mysterious.
It's so mysterious. And we'd like to make some, but we don't know everything about it yet.
Okay, I would not like to make some. Sarah would like to make some. But, I mean, because I've even seen things where people are saying that, like, in order to make a Horcrux, he had to actually, like, be a cannibal or something crazy like that. Like, even small details like that of, like, how exactly do you make a Horcrux is not explained at all in the books, really.
Yeah.
Like, we know you have to kill somebody, but he kills a ton of people, and he only makes seven Horcruxes, so...
Well, I think when you're killing someone, you have to be killing that person to make the Horcrux.
Right, like, there has to be intent to make a Horcrux.
That takes care of our weekly wizarding question. This is something that we're very interested in. So if you have thoughts on that, definitely send them to us, because I feel like there's a piece that we're missing. now.
Yeah, like a piece of our soul, for example.
I'm hungover, so he says it's funny today. So.
Okay. So.
This morning. Some backstory. About Quidditch.
Yeah, some backstory about Quidditch. So I'm not going to go into some of the things that I've seen on the internet of where people were like, this is where Quidditch started in the wizarding world, because we're going to go into how Rowling came up with Quidditch. Yeah. So she came up with the sport when she was in a Manchester hotel after a row, I love that word, with her with her then boyfriend. And she said that she had been, this is a quote, "I have been pondering the things that hold a society together, cause it to congregate and signify its particular character, and I knew I needed a sport." And we had also talked about how she was mad at her boyfriend, and she didn't understand how men and their sports and all the complicated rules and everything. So that's why she came up with such a complicated sport.
And it is very complicated.
It's very complicated. She says that the word Quidditch isn't derived from any mythological or etymological, I think that's how you say that, anything like that. It was just something where she just started coming up with words that started with Q for some reason. I don't know why she was like, I need a Q word, but that's what she did.
I absolutely want to see the other names that didn't make the cut.
Absolutely. I do too.
That would be great.
Yeah. But despite the sport's popularity with a lot of the fans in the books, Rowling grew to dislike describing the matches. And in an interview, she said, "To be honest with you, Quidditch matches have been the bane of my life in the Harry Potter books. They are necessary in that people expect Harry to play Quidditch, but there is a limit to how many ways you can have them play Quidditch together and for something new to happen." And I mean, I get that, particularly because it's nothing for the plot. Like, there is no plot development. It's just that it's a part of Harry's life, and it's the side thing that's important to him.
And
so
this is one of the biggest arguments that people have, for those that don't enjoy Quidditch, is that in the very early books, so the first probably three books, there are just pages and pages and pages of sports commentary about Quidditch and what's going on. And if you don't have an interest in sports, which there are plenty of people that don't, it's not interesting. And it doesn't add to the plot. Now we get some of our favorite Harry Potter moments out of Quidditch scenes, I think. And so there's that value in that way. And you get to explore the relationship between people that we don't normally get to see. So we get a little bit of a Harry and Ginny. We get a lot of Harry and Ron at different points. But the idea that he plays Quidditch is not then, it doesn't shape him as a character that he's a good Quidditch player.
No,
it's fun. And we notice that as the books go on, the scenes get shorter and shorter, and then there's no more Quidditch. So you can see that, like, I mean,
she's getting bored with it.
Right. And it mirrors what's happening in the books really well. So it's okay that it gets phased out because there's more serious things going on than Quidditch.
Right.
But yeah, you can definitely tell that it's something that goes by the wayside.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of that, the final Quidditch scene in the books is in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And Rowling experienced, in her words, fiendish glee writing the scene, because it features very memorable commentary by Luna Lovegood. And that is one of my favorite scenes with Luna, where she's just going off the rails trying to commentate this game.
And I mean, anyone who commentates these games has really big shoes to fill, because our all-time favorite sports commentator has amazing comments the whole time. And that's Jordan. So
he's pretty
fun. And that's really the only interaction we get with him as a character, despite being a really good friend of Fred and George's. So
So it's cool. And that's was going to be the other thing I brought up too about Quidditch, is that for some reason, it's one of the scenes where we get to see a lot more about other characters, like Angelina Johnson and Katie Bell, for example, are two players that we don't really have any other interaction with other than on the Quidditch pitch. And Angelina Johnson marries one of the twins, so
I mean, we get exposure to other houses through Quidditch. We get a lot more Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff through Quidditch that we don't get really any other time.
Yeah, but I mean, Cho Chang plays Quidditch. That's how Harry knows her.
She does. And that's one of the things he likes most about her, is that he feels like she could almost beat him. That was, like, one of the attraction points for them. So, Quidditch, I think, does play a bigger role than some people give it credit for, because the actual scenes can get kind of long. But there's a lot that stems from that I think is important to the book.
And I also think that if you aren't someone who likes sports or watches sports, it can be hard to visualize what she's describing.
Yeah.
When she's talking about the logistics of the game happening. So I think that can maybe be an issue for people. And I get that, but yeah.
And I mean, if you're someone who already thinks that sports are silly and you're reading text about a sport that was designed to emphasize how silly sports can be,
yeah,
and how arbitrary rules can be, it's probably not something that you enjoy very much.
Probably not.
So here are some of the basics about Quidditch. And Quidditch reminds me a lot of Whose Line Is It Anyways? And that the rules really don't matter and the points don't always count.
So, yeah, definitely.
Quidditch, if you don't know, is a pretty dangerous, like, not sure I'd let my kid kind of play it sport.
Yeah, it's rough.
That's considered semi-contact, and it's played by witches and wizards when they are riding broomsticks, which is all very charming and enchanting in its own right, but mm-hmm. it's played on broomsticks. And yeah. it's one of the only times that we see people using broomsticks. There are not a lot of people who actually use broomsticks for transportation purposes, mm-hmm. but it's the essential part of this sport. And we find that broomsticks do make a huge difference. There's a lot of back and forth between Gryffindor and Slytherin throughout the books about who's got nice broomsticks, who doesn't have nice broomsticks, the advantage and disadvantage that they give. So it's definitely mm-hmm. a sport where having money matters.
Yeah.
And it's played at Hogwarts, and it's also played professionally. There are professional men's and women's teams. At Ginny actually ends up playing for a professional women's team.
Hollyhead Harpies, right?
Mm-hmm. And we see professional players like Victor Crumb, who plays for the Bulgarian team. So there's professional and then there's amateur sports. And it's played at Hogwarts as like an inter-house play. And I would assume that it's played at other schools, but also maybe not, because Victor Crumb plays professionally while he's at school. At Durmstrang. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's because he was so good that he would rather play professionally than play for one of like his houses. But mm-hmm. I've also read with other schools that other schools didn't divide their students in the way that Hogwarts did. So it may have been difficult to have a bunch of different teams because there wasn't necessarily a bunch of different houses.
Right.
So with Hogwarts, it's super easy because you just try out and play for your own house. They've got four teams that play on a rotating schedule. But mm-hmm. if, like, Durmstrang, there's no indication that they split their kids up in any particular way. It's just kind of a school. And it's an all-male school. So that may also make it different. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows?
Hogwarts places so much weight on the outcome of these matches. It's the house... So the House Cup is somewhat determined by the points you get playing Quidditch. And then there's also the Quidditch Cup. And Slytherin really kicks some ass when it comes to Quidditch for a while. So by the time that Harry gets to school, it's been a goodly amount of time since Slytherin has not won it, which is why his Quidditch career is so exciting for people. But the matches are played on big oval pitches with three ring-shaped goals that are different heights, and you get different points for shooting in each of them, I think, probably. But the field is 500 feet long and 180 feet wide and an infinite height. So players can go up as high as they want to go, which how do you ref if they're up there?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Each team has seven players at a time. There are three chasers who control the Quaffle, and they basically try to score points that are so small. Small points.
Yeah.
So these are people like Angeline Johnson and Katie Bell are chasers for the Gryffindor team, who are quite talented, and they're one of the only handful of female Quidditch players we see at Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. Then we've got two beaters. They have bats, and they hit bludgers around at opposing teams to try and knock them off their brooms, and they also hit them to try and protect their chasers and their seekers from getting hit with bludgers from other teams. This is what the Weasleys did, the Weasley twins, for the most part, when they were mm-hmm. playing, and they were quite good at it. Then you've got the keeper, who is basically the goalie. Their job is to guard the goalpost and try to stop the chasers from scoring. And Oliver Wood was a very good keeper. And then when he left, Ron was a keeper who has debatable talent, I think.
Debatable, yes.
And then you've got the Seeker. The Seeker basically is separated from all that rest of the game, and their only focus is to catch the snitch. And they play a really crucial role because the game only ends if they have caught the snitch. So,
which is the most bonkers rule of all, in my opinion.
Yes. It's worth a lot of points, and there's all kinds of stuff that goes into, like, you can catch the snitch but not win, and it's a whole thing, which we'll talk
about. A lot of strategy with the snitch.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So some notable Seekers, obviously Victor Crumb, who plays professionally, Ginny Weasley, who plays at Hogwarts and professionally, and then Harry. And Harry playing Quidditch as the Seeker especially was a very, very big deal, and we get a really fond scene out of that whole thing, which is when he saves Neville's Remembrall from Draco, who had, like, chucked it. And this is where we find out that McGonagall, for as not fun as she is, she loves Quidditch.
I love it.
She's super into it. Some of the teachers take it super seriously, but we now know that McGonagall was a Seeker, like a very talented one. In her day. So she takes Quidditch very seriously. She had to stop playing because of an injury. And I'm a sports gal, and I know that just because I get injured doesn't mean I don't get super into sports. I can't play anymore. So,
yeah. And it's also a big deal because, and it makes sense that McGonagall pulled some strings because Harry technically wasn't supposed to play first year. First years aren't supposed to play.
They have to take basic broom riding courses before they can play. So she does have to pull a lot of strings because he's, like, not even supposed to know how to fly yet, although he's quite talented. So,
yeah,
obviously he doesn't need those classes.
And then it's really funny that that's the first hint that we see of McGonagall of being, like, not really a rules person,
right?
Not if she doesn't want to be,
which is great. And
yeah.
Because Harry has no idea what's going on with Quidditch, then we also get a scene where Oliver Wood is explaining to us the basic rules and the basics of the game. So, I mean, it's a nice way to introduce it.
Yeah, definitely. So next we're going to go into the different types of balls in Quidditch, and it's nonsensical, to be honest, but the whole game is, so it's kind of fun. So there is the Quaffle, there are Bludgers, and then there's the Golden Snitch that we talked about. Each game is played with four balls because there are actually two Bludgers. The Snitch is special because it's made with a flesh memory,
something like that.
Yeah. So while making it, it has to be handled with gloves. The flesh memory helps the Snitch know who first touched it. And it's used in matches where two players look like they can catch it at the same time. So that's a really cool detail that I'm shocked that she put in, but it ended up working out for her. And then the Quaffle is what is actually used to score. That's what the chasers are throwing around, while the Bludgers and Snitch are just kind of out there at the side. The Bludgers are what are trying to knock people off their brooms, and the Snitch is just chilling. The Snitch is worth 150 points if caught, and you can catch the Snitch and not win, like we said. One example was Ireland versus Bulgaria in 1994, which is where Crumb caught the Snitch, and that was the Quidditch World Cup that we see in Book 4. And, yeah, Bulgaria still didn't win, even though they caught the Snitch. So,
and that was all strategy.
All strategy.
He caught it because he knew that his team couldn't win, which then just makes me think, why is there such a disparity between teams? If these are the two best teams in all of the world, why is Bulgaria so bad that they can get 150 points and not win?
Yeah, I don't know. It's strange.
Very strange. So then we've got the rules. And the rules are technically official, but also not official, because there are a bunch of governing bodies that decide what rules they're going to follow. But in 1750, the British Ministry of Magic set down official rules for the game. And the first,
which makes me think that Quidditch is British.
It does.
In origin.
Yes. Or maybe they were just the first people to formalize it. There's all kinds of stuff about the origins of Quidditch. and what countries it started in and what game it originally started out as, but there's so many of them that it's hard to know which fictional thing is correct.
Right. Particularly because I haven't seen anything from Rowling herself about that.
No, and I'm pretty sure that one of her short stories is a Quidditch book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quidditch through the Ages, and I haven't read it.
No, I haven't read it. So maybe if we read it, we'll know, but yeah. So the first rule is that players can't stray over the boundaries, but they can fly as high as they want to. So it's a 500 by 180 oval. And we see all sorts of instances where people are getting really close to that boundary. Mm-hmm. And then with the Dementors in the third book, that rule is not followed. The Quaffle has to be surrendered if a player leaves the boundaries. So if they go out of bounds and they have the Quaffle, they have to turn that over. And that's one of the ways that you can get more points. A timeout can be called at any time by the captain. And timeouts can be up to 2 hours if the game has already lasted for more than 12 hours. and then if you don't come back after your timeout, then you're disqualified. And this is kind of funny. Because we've heard about times when games lasted for days and days and days. So,
2 hour nap, guys.
Pretty much. Penalties can be awarded by the referee. Chasers will take the penalty by flying from the circle towards the scoring area, and the opposing team's keeper attempts to stop it, but nobody else can get in the way. So it's basically a penalty shot.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know what the seekers do at this point in time, like if they have to stop seeking or if they can keep trying to catch the snitch. The seekers kind of function independently from the rest of the game, so I would assume
that they're still
they can do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Contact is allowed, but you can't hold brooms or people. So you can run into people, but you can't hold on to them.
Yeah, sounds about right. There's no substitution of players allowed throughout the game, even if a player is too injured or tired to continue to play, which is crazy. And in Goblet of Fire during the Quidditch World Cup, at some point, it lasted for days, allegedly, like we had said, like there are games that last for days. So, players did have to be switched out then, I guess, to get some sleep. So like we said, the rules don't really matter.
Yeah. Well, it seems like as long as captains are agreeing on stuff, people can kind of do whatever they want.
Yeah. They just have to agree on the rule, and then that's the rule for that game.
Yeah.
Players may take their wands to the pitch, but they must not be used on or against any other players, on any other player's broomsticks, the referee, or any of the four balls, or the spectators.
It seems like you're just asking for a broken wand.
Yeah, honestly. Like, I don't know why you'd need it. If you can't do anything with it,
I don't know.
The only thing I can think of is one time during a rain match in one of the games, they enchanted their goggles to like not fog up or something, but I don't know why you just need to bring your wand with you constantly. Anyways.
Yeah, I would think you would do that before, like you would do that at the beginning and then you'd like leave it in your bag.
Yeah. I don't know. Particularly if you can take timeouts of 2 hours, like,
yeah,
go get your wand and do something if you need to. Anyways, next rule is a game of Quidditch will only end once the golden snitch is caught or the mutual consent of both team captains. And like we said, games have been known to go for days. So with players rotating in and out to get sleep. So that's what you had just said. If you agree to it, then it's fine.
Yeah.
And then the last rule, only the keeper can block Quaffle shots thrown by the opposing team. That seems like a really basic one after all of those complicated but not sort of rules.
I mean, it seems really basic, but at the same time, not, because in other sports, the goalies can come out and play other positions. They just can't, you know, use their hands if it's soccer or whatever.
Right.
But this, and other players can block shots. So if you're in the way in a hockey game or in a soccer game, like if you're playing defense, you can get in the way and block shots. But
right.
So that's kind of an interesting one. I think that being keeper would be very difficult.
I think so too.
There's a lot of space in between the different hoops. And you got to really keep an eye out for that. Oliver Wood was very good, at least by their standards. So
did he ever play professionally? Did we ever hear?
I don't really know what ended up happening with him.
Oh, Oliver.
Oh, Oliver. And Oliver Wood, you gotta love it, because he scared the shit out of Harry originally. Because yeah. McGonagall goes to get him after she sees Harry's free dive for the Remember All and walks into a class and says, you know, send Wood out here. And there's that scene where Harry's thinking that he's about to get paddled. Mm-hmm. Like a giant block of wood.
So I did look it up. Let me see. He only appears once in Goblet of Fire, and that's where we hear that he had just been signed to Puddlemere United reserve team. So he did play professional Quidditch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good for him. Mm-hmm. Good for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are quite a few people who go on to play professionally from what we know. We don't get a lot of names of other teams' Quidditch players. I mean, we see the Slytherin team quite a bit, because that seems to be the big rivalry is when Slytherin plays Gryffindor.
Yeah.
But we don't really ever get introduced to the characters.
Mm-mm. And then there's some of those fringe ones, like Cho Chang was on the Ravenclaw. I think Cedric Diggory played for Hufflepuff.
I believe so. Yeah.
For some reason in my brain, I'm connecting Hannah Abbott to Quidditch, but I don't actually know.
I thought too, because she's really good friends with Katie Bell.
Yeah. So. Hannah Abbott. Quidditch. I'm Googling.
Guys, we did a lot of research for this, okay?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm looking it up. Hold on. Please hold. She was a prefect. Good for her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see anything about Quidditch. So maybe we're wrong. No, I think we're wrong.
We're just done with them. Well,
sorry.
But we get introduction to characters that we don't get a lot of other interaction with otherwise. Yep. And it's nice to get kind of a sporty feel at the school, because there's no physical activity otherwise.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. And it's interesting because there's only a very select group of people that play Quidditch. We've done the game before where we try to figure out, you know, how many students are at Hogwarts. Mm-hmm. And if there's 7 people on the pitch at a time and you don't really have substitutes for people, that means that there's not a lot of people on each, you know, from each house that play.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. And I have heard on other podcasts before when they have talked about Quidditch, that a lot of Americans found the idea of like inter-school play to be super weird, but people who go to boarding schools and cultures where boarding schools are much more acceptable, it's very common.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Squad play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously in the US, your high school plays other high schools, your colleges play other colleges. They don't really play each other.
Yeah. But
it's more an all-encompassing world when you go to things like a boarding school, which is what I would compare Hogwarts to.
Yeah, it is a boarding school. Yeah.
And there are so many fewer magical schools, obviously, mm-hmm. the population is so much smaller, that it would be kind of ridiculous for them to play a school in
Bulgaria. South. Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe in Europe, they're a little bit closer, but I mean, it's a lot of travel for them to play Quidditch. So
yeah, I mean, and during the Wizarding Triwizard tournament, those schools go and stay at Hogwarts. It's not like they're traveling back and forth.
Yeah, they literally live there 4 months.
That's a lot.
And it makes sense. The other reason that it makes so much sense to me that there's inner house play is because there is so much competition generated between the houses anyway.
Yeah.
That adding a sporty element to it makes total sense to me.
Yeah.
So I would say that's probably fine. So mm-hmm. I know a lot of people think it's weird from what
I mean,
inner house play, but I mean, there's a point system for which house is the smartest / does the most nice stuff or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe as a child, before you really, at least in America, if you don't go to boarding school, before you really know kind of like what boarding school is,
yeah
it's probably weird. But if you're an adult reading this, I feel like, what's sense. Your problem?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because it seems like people go from playing at boarding school to being professional. So I'm wondering if there's like an in-between league, a minor league in a sense.
Yeah, I don't know.
Generate that, because there aren't really coaches.
No, there's no coaches. That's there's, something that they, I think is strange.
They have
yeah.
to have a teacher who will sponsor their team at Hogwarts, at least. But it's like, okay, whatever kid is best, so Oliver Wood, whatever kid knows the most about Quidditch, is the captain and also the coach and also runs the practices.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Kind of crazy. It's kind of an interesting makeup. But from what we know, from what Ron has said, most witches and wizards grow up playing Quidditch in their yards, because he talks about how he and his brothers would just go out on their brooms and play like short-sighted Quidditch in their yard as kids.
Yeah.
So it seems like everyone kind of grows up playing it, which maybe you don't need a coach.
Maybe, but all at the same time, like, they won't even let the kids play until technically their second year.
Right.
So they think there's enough training needed to learn how to fly a broom correctly. Why wouldn't you have the same kind of training during the play, like with a coach?
Well, I'm wondering if that is part of it, and we just didn't really get to read that. If during those classes that you take when you're learning how to fly a broom, they also go over Quidditch, since that's predominantly what the brooms are used for.
I would, yeah, I mean, I'd assume. I
because
mean,
Madame Hooch is also the
yeah.
rat.
Yeah,
I would think that that was kind of included. Although all of Harry's Quidditch education that we see comes from Oliver Wood.
Right.
So, I don't know. With all the craziness that Quidditch is, we do get some really memorable moments, though, that I think everyone thinks are fun. Whether or not you think the sport is fun, the moments that we get out of it are kind of fun. And we have like notable moments from each book, even though Quidditch doesn't appear in every book, which I think is fun. Obviously in book one, Harry, he doesn't swallow the snitch, but he kind of swallows the snitch.
He's yeah, nearly.
It's his first win, and it kind of scares the Quidditch scene at Hogwarts, because up to this point, I think they said it had been 7 years since someone other than Slytherin had won a Quidditch cup.
Yeah.
So it was really exciting that Gryffindor was going to have a team. McGonagall was kind of like, ooh, cool, made a good decision. Let
yeah.
me play.
Also in that first book is where they really start, the kids, the trio really start to think that it's Snape trying to kill Harry. Because of the whole curse, counter curse, setting Snape on fire situation.
Yep.
So that's important plot.
Very important
during a Quidditch game.
It's nice for us in these early books to see Harry doing things that he likes, because he gets to school and he makes some friends, and then he's on a team and he's good at it, and people are liking that he's good at it. So now there are some issues that get caused, because this Harry's already the chosen one, and they're also now bending school rules for him.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Well, bless you.
Thank you. So it does kind of make, it does kind of rub some of the other students the wrong way.
And I understand that feeling.
Absolutely. I'm a big everyone gets treated the same way kind of gal.
Yeah.
But McGonagall really likes Quidditch. She's very serious. I distinctly remember reading that she had a bet with other teachers that they would like bet on the games.
Hell yeah.
And that she had owed, you know, for the last however many years, had been paying out that bet, and she was like really excited not to have to this year and stuff.
Yeah.
Then we've got book two, and we've got Harry's broken arm and the whole Lockhart incident, where he's like, I'll fix it, and then he takes all the bones out of Harry's arm.
Fixed it.
Yep, doesn't hurt anymore. Not broken, because you don't have the bones. Which is a really comical moment, and I think that was the moment for me that I was like, Jesus, this guy really has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah. Up until then, it's been shaky. But at that point, it was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And then we also get a little exposure in that moment to magical medicine and kind of the metaphysics behind, well, we can fix a bone super easily, but regrowing bones is like super complicated. And, you know,
which whatever. I think is really funny, because then later on, Roland writes Potter's family history, and his ancestor created Skellagrow.
Yep. So
uh-huh.
So she Funny. Did that on purpose.
She did that.
She definitely did. Then we've got book three, and things are starting to get darker in the books at this point, and that's also signaled through what's going on the Quidditch pitch, because then we've got Dementors all around Quidditch, and Harry almost dies falling off his broom because he's had interactions with Dementors while he's flying looking for the Snitch.
They just wanted to watch the game, you know?
They just get too into it.
They just got far too into it. Yeah.
Far too into it. And then in book four, there's no Quidditch at Hogwarts because they have the Triwizard Tournament going on, which I would be kind of pissed if I was literally everyone else at the school. The Triwizard Tournament, the actual challenges, were really spread out. It doesn't seem like it when you watch the movies. It kind of seems like they're back to back, but they're literally like months apart.
Yeah, which doesn't make sense as to why they would fully quit Quidditch.
Right. Now, I know that for that first challenge, they had to use the Quidditch pitch, but they're magical, and I don't think it took that long to set it up.
Yeah, like, just move some things around.
Yeah, you know, there's only one person from each school who's taking part in these challenges, supposedly. So yeah. Like there aren't plenty of people who could still play Quidditch.
Right. That seems a little silly.
Yeah, kind of a weird one to me.
Then book five, Harry, Fred, and George are all banned from Quidditch, which is, like, devastating to Harry.
Devastating. And Fred and George are, like, pretty sad about it, too, because that's kind of their thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that's all because of the one we all love to hate. Umbridge. She bans them, and I think it was just punishment. It was just punishment, just like you're banned from Quidditch, fuck you.
Well, it was,
it wasn't like related to Quidditch.
No, it wasn't, and it wasn't like a 5-year suspension. She technically banned them for life.
Yeah, which is like, ugh, I don't know, I just hate her. This is also the year where Ron joins the team.
And in the movie, this is not portrayed correctly.
No, it isn't. Because Harry never quits Quidditch in the movies. He's never banned from Quidditch. But in the books, he def is. And this is also when Ginny becomes the Seeker.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, because she's now got to replace her Seeker and her Beaters. Like, and this is like in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's hard. Yeah. In the movies, it shows that Ron joins the team in book six, but in the sixth movie, but he technically joins it and doesn't ever play in book five.
Yeah. Yep. So. And then in book six is where we get some Ron being semi-okay and also horrible at Quidditch. And this is where we had kind of hinted of, like, his skills are debatable.
They're debatable. I mean, he gets the position that he has because Hermione uses a Confundus charm on another person trying out, which is
McCormick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, not very Hermione.
It's not, but love will make you do stupid things, Sarah.
Ugh, God, I just together.
But this is where we get our Weasley is our king, which started out as a chant from the Slytherins to talk about how Weasley was helping them win the games. And then it gets taken back when Gryffindor does beat Slytherin, and then everybody starts cheering that Weasley is our king. So, yeah. And then in book seven, we have no Quidditch whatsoever. But the Snitch does come back. And this is where the flesh memory comes in. And we get the stone in the Snitch, which I was like, oh, it holds things? Okay.
Mm-hmm. You completely cut out there for a minute. You got to backtrack. Book seven.
Okay, so book seven, this is where there's no more Quidditch at all anymore, but the Snitch does come back. This is where the flesh memory comes into play, which she conveniently put in there, and that's where we get the stone, all that. Mm-hmm. I open at the close, all of that jazz.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that Dumbledore leaves in his will, is he leaves Harry the Snitch, and when Harry touches it, it shows, you know, that it recognizes him. And then when he is walking to his death, he, like, holds it up to his mouth. And he's like, I'm ready to die. And so that's eye open at the close. And there's the resurrection stone. So he gets to see his family one last time.
Yeah. All of that. All happy of that. Things.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. All right, dead mom and dad. I'm going to go die too. So that's tough.
And Sirius. And, oh, Remus, you're dead? I didn't. Did he know at that point? Yeah, he knew at that point.
I think he knew at that point.
He knew at that point, but still horrible. Still. Yeah.
Still not ideal. Yeah.
No. Mm-mm.
So a lot of moments in Quidditch, Quidditch scenes in the movies are super fun. In the books, I agree that they can get a little bit drawn out, but it's supposed to be. And yes. I think that there are a lot of people who didn't know the intent of Quidditch when she read it, you know, when she was writing it. And then she didn't release a statement on Quidditch until like a couple of the books had already been published, to the best of my knowledge. So mm-hmm. once people found out, like, it's kind of supposed to be ridiculous like this, it's got to be hard to follow. I don't know. I feel like you would hate it less after that if you didn't like it before. I think it's fun.
I think it's very fun.
I absolutely want to play Quidditch.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we both played sports growing up, but I like complicated sports. I like strategy, and there's a ton mm-hmm. of strategy in Quidditch. So it's fun. I like it. And of course, we could have both played Quidditch in college, technically. Yes,
technically.
Technically, there is Muggle Quidditch, and it's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Muggle Quidditch is the funniest thing I think I've ever seen in my lifetime.
I hate it. Oh, my God. I hate it.
I mean, it looks stupid, but it's so funny. And I just like, you know what? You guys lean into it. Go for it. Have fun.
No. So I always hated the Quidditch people because we had one field that could be used by anyone that wasn't the intramural field. So when we'd play pickup soccer, that's where we'd go. And they would have set up their Quidditch already and we couldn't play. But like there weren't goals anywhere else on campus. So
you had a different kind of experience than I did. Our guys just played on like there was a patch of green outside of the library and they just fucking did it there. They just went for it. And I respect them.
You have to have so much confidence to play Muggle Quidditch though.
Oof. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Can you imagine being the snitch in Muggle Quidditch?
Yeah, and so in Muggle Quidditch, the snitch is just a person who runs around and you literally have to pick them up and drag them back to like this predetermined spot to win.
It's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. So.
And they do have broomsticks. You just have to hold them between your legs while you're running around.
So sometimes it's a broom and sometimes it's like a long PVC pipe.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Yeah. So. But there's like... There are tournaments between colleges. This is
it's
thing.
Big now.
Yeah.
It's big now for sure.
Yeah, it's funny.
Well, so that's a little bit about Quidditch. There's so much more about Quidditch. We might do a second episode on Quidditch at some point where we talk specifically about Quidditch at Hogwarts because that's, you know, what we get the most exposure to. But we'll see where that fits into our schedules.
Or maybe we'll do we will read Quidditch Through the Ages and talk about that aspect of Quidditch. Who knows?
Yeah, that would be fun. That would be fun.
We'll see.
That would require us to do some research, though.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would require that.
So, Delaney, what are you loving this week?
Well, in case anybody doesn't know, I'm thoroughly obsessed with all kinds of makeup. And there's been a couple makeup launches recently that I'm stoked about. I'm currently wearing a lipstick that is called Mrs. Norris. So that's amazing. Also this week, if anybody watches YouTube, you'll probably know who Shane Dawson and Jeffree Star are. They came out with their collection after a massive documentary about how they created it. And I actually snagged some and I'm pretty stoked about it because it sold out completely.
So I gotta say, Jeffree Star scares me.
Well, I mean, he scares a lot of people, but.
And I think that he's kind of racist still.
So I don't think he's racist anymore. He's talked about that at length. And if you don't like him, I get it. He's a polarizing figure. I'm not even really sure how I feel about him specifically, but after this series, I like him more.
Look, all I'm saying is I saw the shades in the eyeshadow palette that people were freaking out about. No one is going to fucking wear those colors.
I will.
Oh, my God.
I'm so excited about the palette. It's so good because there's neutrals that you can wear all day. There's some bright colors, and then there's some, like, different, like, shimmery colors. Ooh, it's a great palette. Truly great. I'm excited.
Guys, I could not care less about makeup.
Yeah, well, but what are you loving this week?
I use a, I guess like a facial serum to try and help my skin by a company that's, it's called Valjean Labs, which I don't know if anybody uses it. I've seen it around, but I got two more of their different serums. One's an overnight one and one's one for hydration for my skin. Cause God, it's so cold and dry here now and my skin is freaking out. Mm-hmm. And it's just making my skin feel very soft, which I'm enjoying. Nice. And that's always nice to find skincare products that are not super expensive, but you feel like they work, because skincare is big money.
Skincare can get real expensive, but there's been a lot of brands and companies recently who have been starting to come out with like reasonable things. And I'm so excited because it's expensive. And you can have like a good product that works great for one person and not at all for another. So it sucks to have to spend so much money on something that may not work.
Yeah.
So that's great.
So that's what we're loving this week. We will be updating our holiday release schedule here at some point on social media, probably. But there will most likely be limited episodes in December.
In December, yeah. I don't think in November it will affect us much, but in December, yeah.
November will be our regular bi-weekly schedule, but there might not be any in December. I know I'm doing a lot of traveling for December, and work. My work schedule gets really crazy. In December, so we'll see about putting out episodes, but we want to be able to enjoy the holidays, so we may go no episodes in December and then pick it back up in the new year.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll have to talk about it.
Yeah, but figure it out. You guys know. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you enjoyed today, please let us know by rating and reviewing the podcast on whatever listening platform you use. Please leave us 5 stars, share it with a friend, subscribe so you know when we're putting out uploads. And you can always connect with us on social media. We're on Instagram at Lumos Maxima Podcast, on Twitter at Lumos Maxima Pod. And if you want to send us an email, you can reach us at lumosmaximapodcast@gmail.com. So we do read the emails. We just wait until we have like a couple to read out to people, but we do read them and we'll write back and we'll become best friends.
That's a little much, but yeah, sure.
thanks for listening, and we will catch you guys next episode. Bye.
Bye.